Comic Spotlight, the show where we do a deep dive into an ongoing series or graphic novel from a company other than the big two. And today is Indie Comic Spotlight presents Back to the Bibliography, when Sean met Ed and fell in love. They looked at each other across beautiful artwork and were like, hey guys, hey boo, what's up with you? No, or they smoked a lot of heroin or whatever. I don't know. We've got lots to talk about. You heard that voice, my co-host and partner on this, Back to the Bibliography. Hello, friend. Hey, Jack. How's it going?
I'm great, thank you. And all the better for talking about this.
Oh, my God.
You know, it's been a long time coming for you and I.
We've
tried a couple of times to get here.
I believe this is the fourth time we've tried to cover this
book. That sounds right.
Just this book. And last time we were like, fuck it. We're going to do two at once. Nope. We couldn't even get through that. But we were prepared to do volumes one and two, but we're here to just cover volume one of Criminal, which is called Coward. It is written by Ed, drawn by Sean, colored by Val Staples. That's no joke.
No.
So
I've got things to say about colors.
Yes, as you should. So this came out in 2015. As the collected edition, the volume one is, so it's 1 through 5. So that was, it came out in 2014. The collected edition came out in 2015. Boy, this is the beginning, the full beginning of their lifelong contract with Image.
Yeah. And the full beginning of who they truly are as a pair, I think. What we've done before has been good, but this is like, oh, this is who you are, and this is what we're going to get from now on.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Keep it coming, please.
Yeah. Because this is when, because, you know, we discussed before, like, them playing in other sandboxes, right? Mm-hmm. They're living in Jim Lee's world, and then they're with DC and whatever. And the cool thing about Ed and Sean is, and again, I'm not here to shit on Kelly Sue and Matt. They did what they did with Substack, and you know, but they had the Milk Fed Criminal stuff. They had their own lines. You know, she worked for Image. He worked for Image. Substack was like sending all this money out to try to get all these comic people to come over. And I remember, and you sent me the article. This was when we first came up with this idea 18 years ago in another life. Ed was like, me and Sean talked, and we're like, meh, we're fine. We're fine where we are. And look who
we're doing it
up,
anyway.
Look who ended up being right.
Because
all that's crumbling.
Oh, okay.
Turns out, you know, you can't just like promise people a bunch of money when you don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just
saying. And if they've got an idea for any project, we don't want the possibility of that going under. We need to be seeing and reading that project. So yeah, I'm glad that they stuck with their guns, and it means we continue. I mean, by the time we catch up to what our original list was, there would have been, at the rate they're releasing stuff, another 10 graphic novels out, I would have thought. It's, you know, they're a machine once they get
they
going.
Are it is really kind of crazy, and really the machine is Sean, because Ed, mm-hmm. like, as the writer, you can write, you can get as far ahead as you want, right?
Yeah.
But Sean's the one, and you know, and I follow him on Instagram. I don't know if you do.
I don't, but maybe I should.
You should. Sometimes he like posts pictures of other people he likes, and sometimes he's like, look at this cool watercolor. I'm like, how do you have time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Aren't you busy? What is going on? Yeah, so
he's got the Marathon Man eyes pinned open, and just so you can constantly.
It is something. Right.
Mm.
It is really something special. So anyway, yeah. So we're here. We're at the beginning of the Criminal universe. We're going to spend time in the Criminal verse. You've got the master list, but we're doing, is it 8 volumes before we leave?
Oh, that's a great question.
It's a while.
I don't think it's not as many as 8. It's 4 Criminals.
Okay.
And then, if we class the noir collection, if we're going to do that as like a little break.
Yeah.
But it's, and then 2 more. So it's kind of 6 Criminals as 4 graphic novels.
Okay.
You're right. So before we get to Incognito. So
yeah, and then they yes, come back for a couple more volumes. This isn't over.
Yeah,
they come, they revisit, and then we get okay, cool. Well, so I mean, there's so many places to start. I have questions. I have thoughts. Mm-hmm. So obviously, Brubaker and Phillips. We've talked previously about what we like about them, how we discovered them. I mean, I discovered Sean because of Ed. Like I,
mm-hmm.
like Ed was Ed, right? And so then I found Sean via him. Same.
I think so. Although I think I probably just read them together first before I realized, okay, that's Ed Brubaker. You know, probably didn't really occur to me that.
Oh, that he's the Winter Soldier guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. I think I just read one of their books and I was like, oh, hello. I'm going to find more of these. And then I traced back and realized.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's amazing, though, you know, and we've discussed his ability to noir. And so it is just really impressive that he can do so much. So it did make sense that Jim Lee reached out to them. I do still, but now reading this, like you said, now reading this and be like, well, it is on.
Yeah, and what's interesting is there is definite, crossover is not the right word, but there's something has carried over from Sleeper, reading this first volume.
I think
there's some character. There's some character tropes that you can see now we're doing this as a project from beginning to end that are kind of have been carried over into this volume. I think this is it, though. This is kind of the full stop on like being influenced about from where you've gone before. This is at that middle ground, I think, of like we've been here, now this is what we're doing, and then
yeah,
from
and
volume
is...
two forwards, it's
Ugh.
now it's us,
right? But I do think this is a good. This is a good bridge. This is a good
oh,
way to
yeah,
bring
yeah,
people
yeah.
over. It was smart. Like, because honestly, these criminal stories, they're published in the order they're published, but they are not in this time. This isn't the order that the events happen.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter. You know, you could Narnia these and reorder them chronologically and get a different and same story. So they could have actually started with volume two, but I think, or maybe even, I mean, they could have started in lots of places, but they started here. And I think you make a good point, is that they were really trying to bridge, bring the Sleeper readers over. Come on, DC people. We're over at Image now. And it's not like at this stage, 2014, like, who are these feisty little upstarts? It's not like they were at, you know, Action Labs or something, or Scout. You know, like, they were, although, you know, man, if Scout could have got them, I mean, Scout's taken off now, but if they could have got them at the early days. But I'm glad that they went to Image. I think Image, they're technically, I mean, it's really, we say big two, but it's big four, right?
Mm-hmm.
And DC sort of owns part of Dark Horse anyway. Warner Brothers has their foot. So it really is just big three. But but this is what they are afraid to do.
Yeah. Just to allow the creators, like, this is a story.
We're going to get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Mike is just like, I got you. You do. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually know who's listed. I mean, I assume, is this Kirkman? Is he officially in charge at this stage of the game?
Oh.
By the time this, not, let me see.
It feels early. I'm not sure. I mean,
Kirkman is considered COO at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. And Todd is still the president, but the publisher is still Eric.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Stevenson. So I said Mike. I was thinking Mike Richardson. He's the one from Dark Horse. Right?
If you say so.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, it is. It's Eric Stevenson is still the publisher. And so it's like, but you still have, I mean, you've got Kirkman, you've got Larson, McFarlane, Silvestri, Valentino. These are the guys. They're the part of that original. I mean, not Kirkman. Kirkman is arguably the reason this Image exists. Right? Because when you think of what those other guys did when they started, Eric Larson's still doing Savage Dragon, right? Todd still doing Spawn. So they're still doing their superhero-y stuff. Silvestri was always a little bit more wackadoo, which is, you know, the Top Cow stuff is always my favorite stuff in Image, except for Brubaker and Phillips. And you know, and it's like this, it's like what Kelly Sue does over here, what her husband does, what Fraction does. I just can be like, hey, this is the story. Cool. You are fully in charge of it. I mean, they give you a lot of help, and they take their cut, but they give you the risk to fail, which I think is really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, and they've earned it though, right? Ed and Sean have earned that right. And this is not something that was given to them. This isn't one of those. There's no Nepo baby bullshit here. These guys busted their ass, right?
Yeah. 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 I mean, obviously, we know we've already covered where they've come from.
Yeah.
Somewhere else, come from different worlds, and they've met each other, and clearly kindred spirits aligned. And
I know. God, it's so good. Yeah.
And now, and you can almost imagine it, can't you? Like where they were at, and you can imagine they went into a pitch meeting. And it was, this is what we've done. But this is where we want to be. This is who we are. I imagine sitting in that pitch meeting, rubbing your hands together, thinking like, oh yeah, like absolutely.
Yeah, and they're it. They're in forever. This is their lifetime with Image. Why would you go anywhere? Why would you leave a company? And this is why. This is what's so frustrating about comics, Jack. It's like the conversations we have in the Discord and the conversations we have with each other. It's like the rest of the family. It's like there's so many frustrating things because people are so risk averse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, just look what happens.
Yeah.
And again, I know you didn't like Pretty Deadly like I like Pretty Deadly, but that's amazing. They let Kelly Sue they're like, go do that. They let her make Bitch Planet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but and also, like, to your point, it doesn't matter whether I completely connect with it or not.
Exactly.
I still wanted to read it, and I'm glad that it exists and it was made and they were given the freedom to do it.
Right.
It's just in this occasion. It wasn't quite for me, you know.
Exactly.
Coffin Bound.
Oh my God!
We know that doesn't connect with an awful lot of people, but you and I
still one of our fewest, one of my least downloaded episodes is Coffin Bound.
I mean, that is criminal.
It is. Oh, I see what you did there. Oh, well. So the criminal verse begins with a book called Coward, where we meet Leo, who mm-hmm. is a planner. He's the man in the chair, as it were.
Another person who's grifted his way from the top, you know, he's a pickpocket and he's he's done the hard graft to get to the position where he can have a bit of safety, hasn't he? He can kind of decide, like you said, do the planning and not put himself in harm's way.
Because his dad put himself in harm's way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Sort of. I mean, it's all convoluted. So, and again,
and only gets more so.
As they move on. Yeah. And it's hard to, we don't want to spoil, like, we'll talk about these books in depth, but like, we're not going to say, ooh, in volume two, we might be like, ooh, can't wait for volume two. But I don't want to, like, I feel like once we finish, like when we get to volume eight,
mm-hmm.
maybe we'll do a criminal recap, unless volume nine is out by then. But like, it'd be nice to be like, okay, let's look at it as these, you know, these 40 books. What does that look like? What's the story? How does book 39 reflect on book two? It does, because, you know, it does, because that's mm-hmm. what they do. They, like you said, they came into the pitch meeting and were like, here's what we're going to do. And it really is. It is amazing. So we meet Leo and there's an opening line. And I was like, well, of course, this is the book that Jack and I are going to read. Whenever things begin to fall into pieces, I think of my father. So like, opening lines, like in mandatory music, we always talk about opening tracks
mm-hmm.
and like a good opening track and what that does for the rest of the album. Opening lines are also hard, right?
Yeah.
As writers, we know you want to start strong, you want to end strong, or start strong and just end in the middle, like Stephen King, whatever you feel like doing. he's not always great at ending. I don't hate him like some people I know, but I do. And I know Heath actually thinks Ed's not the best at ending. He thinks he struggles with some of, and I know you love particularly Ed's endings, but I'm also I do too. I like the way he goes about doing things, but what a way to start. Let's just set the table with that opening line. And that, so it's on the left panel, it's just black and it just says prologue, like in script. And then the right, there is this guy and he looks pretty bad.
He does. You're right. and it just... Yeah, here's our protagonist.
Yeah.
Here's who this book is for, as you just said.
Yeah.
Let's go. Absolutely. Like, yeah.
Yeah, you would know, right? You would know this first page tells you whether this book is for you or not.
Yes, I think so. If I tried to say to Emma to read this, I think she'd be out immediately.
Right. There's nothing here for her. She's like,
no.
Yeah, I don't need that. I don't want a heist. I don't like bad guys as heroes. He's not a hero. Yeah,
no.
I get it. I love, what a way to start. And again, of course, we will talk about Kafka as we go along. And
you will, and I will not.
We have no choice because Ed wants us to talk about.
Sure.
They want us to. This isn't me shoehorning Kafka in. He's here.
It's true. Not on this occasion. No, there's no big Tony swing for the
fences
here. But listen,
I really appreciate it. I wanted to say this on recording, just not off air to your face or in text. I'm putting it on air. Your thing about Susan Cooper flying the coop.
Thank you. Yeah.
I was here for it. I was like, I love that actually, because there is like that whole sense of freedom and it was amazing. So I appreciated it.
So I was channeling you as I did it. So I appreciate that.
And you said my name. I know, but I thought that was thought that was appreciative. I wish I could have seen Blake and your sister's face as you said it to been like, oh, it's amazing. Yeah. I loved it. Anyway, so but this book is that, man. There's a lot of shit going on. So where do you tell me where you want to go. I've got two big questions
sure.
that I want to ask you. Where do you want to go?
Well, I think just broadly speaking, what I think is so good about this is that it somehow toes that really difficult line of leaning very, very heavily into tropes that you know, you're aware of, you've seen, but somehow managing to make it feel fresh, to make it feel like this character is on a journey to a destination that you still don't know where it's going to go, even though you do know. But so they toe that line magnificently, and that's a very, very hard thing to do, I think.
I agree. That blends right into my first big question, so that's perfect. Is he a reliable narrator? Is any of this, what is real and what is fake with Leo? Because this is the first person, we talked about it before with Sleeper, and that I believed the whole time. Mm-hmm. I believed in him because of who he was before and mm-hmm. the fact that it looks like it's literally, like we talked about, pages written from a journal. What a cool thing. So you're like, oh, this is his report.
Mm-hmm.
This is real. Leo's a bit of a piece of shit.
Yeah, of course he is. But he's a classic noir protagonist in the way that I think he is reliable because of the little moments we see. We see how he behaves with, and the name is now escaping me, who's the his dad's friend, who's the old guy
Irwin.
He helped train. Irwin. So how he behaves with him and the way that he looks after him, and he, not necessarily a great character trait, I understand, you know, he provides him with what he needs, which in this instance is to stay high,
right?
You know, his life would genuinely be much worse if he wasn't high. So I think when he talks about him and looks after him, I think the values that we see him present in the story and the choices that he makes just give you enough of a sense that I'm not articulating this well. Like he's a bad guy, but he makes decisions which benefit others rather than himself, but he's not trying to be a hero about it. So I guess because it doesn't take him down like a hero's journey, it doesn't make him into the good guy. That keeps it reliable for me, because if it was him making more of the story, that's where it would go.
Yeah. All right, that's fair. Oof. Ivan.
That was a long way to give
Ivan.
A short
no,
answer.
I loved it. No, that's how I do. Ivan.
Ivan, yes, thank
Not
you.
Irwin.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both knew it started with an I. I hear that. I do. And I agree. I mean, I'm with you. I want to believe him, but also he's still telling us how awesome he is.
Do you think?
He's not. He's saying he's a piece of shit, but ultimately, how do we know any of this happened except he's telling us that it happened?
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I'm mm-hmm. saying, because if we treat this without knowing what happens in Volume 2, we've got this. And so this is their foray into it. The one thing that, so I agree, but the one thing to me that makes it, and this is where Phillips comes into play, right? It's not just a novel. It's where Phillips comes into play. Though that opening, the prologue 5 years prior, he looks worse than he does in the now part of the story. So you can see he was kind of at his lowest. So if he's showing us himself, warts and all, he actually looks older and more run down and more exhausted 5 years ago. And then we meet him now and he's back to like maybe a low risky thing. And he's more taking care of Ivan and his dad, Tommy, is gone and all of this stuff is happening and he's a snitch, as it were, air quotes. Like, is he, you know, he's an informant, but he's still a criminal. He's still doing all this stuff. So it's like, it's interesting to see like, oh, look at how terrible I look. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, this is the first time, because we've read it a bunch preparing for this, but this is the first time when I was reading it where I really was paying attention to like those little subtleties. What are the tells mostly that Sean is doing and Val, but mostly that Sean is doing for us to be like, this is how I can believe him in the way he looks or in the look on his face, more so than even in his dialogue. Because again, when it's a first person narrator, you know, because you write first person crime fiction, like the reason that you do it so well, the thing that you do well, is you describe the little details so we believe you later. Like, so we know you caught the thing because you described what it was like to take this picture or frame this shot or whatever. So, spoiler alert, everybody, Jack's hero is a photographer. So, but you know what I mean? Like, you, I don't know. And I guess he shows us where it's just, it was something new that I thought of this time. So I was like, okay, no. I needed to make sure that I asked.
Yeah, I hadn't, do you know what? I hadn't even thought of it. So I'm glad we were having that conversation, and it will give, you know, the inevitable next read, it will give me a different perspective to consider as I'm going through it. But I think, I think he is. And there's some moments where he makes choices or he does things which don't paint him in a good light. So again, that helps to sell the reliable nature too, I suppose.
Because he's showing us the works.
Yeah, as you said. Yeah. So it's not just, I love that. Again, I hadn't thought about that, of how he looked in the previous part. But so yeah, how Phillips has drawn him, but then how Ed's decided some of the decisions he makes. I think those two things help to sell it.
Yeah, that's good. I love, part of what we like about Moore though is that you have to, it's set in a world that is real-ish. I mean, like, there's space noir and science fiction noir and fantasy noir and all this other stuff, sure. But this is like the real good, gritty, dirty, underbelly noir is the stuff that you're like, that could happen. And that's what makes this so good, is there's nothing, I can't find anywhere where they cut a corner.
No. It's neo-noir realist Sin City, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And even to the Bay City stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, I have that on my notes. I'm like, okay, hey, Frank, we're going to show this big Bay City sign. Just as a reminder, we like you. And yes, we'll definitely show boobs too, but we're going to be less misogynistic and gross about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, the, is it Delroy? The Delroy character? Delron. The big like grotesque guy who comes out of prison towards the end. Like, he's a very kind of Miller-esque Sin City type character. So there's definitely like nods to it, but I think you can see that the rejection of the things they didn't like. And yeah, we're gonna tell our version of this kind of story, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's another time when I think, you know, the Delron versus Leo fight towards the end, I think that helps to see, you know, in this kind of moment, in this kind of hero journey, Leo would kick Delron's ass and would look cool doing it. And we'd give a rail and quip at the end. And, you know,
right,
as much as we both love that character. Yeah. But he doesn't. Yeah, he gets his ass kicked.
And he should. It tells you right from the beginning, the title tells you, right, that he's a coward. So that's the other big question. Is he? Or is he just smart?
Yes, I think he's that classic character, isn't he? Who uses what people see in him and accepts the ego bump. He doesn't care about that. He accepts that. And we have that lovely moment, don't we, when he's talking about that, when I can't think of any names tonight. When Greta,
yeah,
it says to him, you know, like, you're not who I thought you were, but you're not also this guy either. And he's like, well,
right, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, were you not scared? It's when the guys are like in the bar, aren't they, like threatening him? And he's like, but they totally emasculated. She doesn't say this, but what she's saying is they totally emasculated you. And he's like, and? Like,
yeah.
I've walked away from that. So I've won in the end. So I think, yeah, he uses what people perceive as his cowardice for his advantage, doesn't he?
Which, again, is something that, and this runs perfectly parallel to, you know, Oliphant season, who doesn't ever back down.
Yeah.
He's the angriest man in the world. Where Leo, in this particular case, we will definitely meet some angry people as the series goes on. And not that Leo's not angry, But it is almost like being saddled with, feeling the responsibility for whatever Ivan and his dad's legacy and the other stuff that's part of his life. And, you know, like he is. And then there's like a code, right? He's a bad guy. So it's always fun when the bad guys have codes, but also he's a bad guy who's working with the police and they're corrupt cops, but he's still working with them.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, is he wrong to do that? Is that also part of what makes him a coward? Is that part of what makes him smart? Do you think less of him for working with the cops? Do you think, how are we supposed to feel about him? How do you feel about him?
It's interesting, isn't it? I don't feel less of him because that's the world he's choosing to live in. I think I feel less of the cops, obviously.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. They're much worse people. I think he's a likable protagonist without being a heroic protagonist. I think, you know, you want him to succeed, but you don't want him to win.
And I think you're smart using the word protagonist over and over. He's not a hero.
No.
This is not a world.
And he doesn't believe he's a hero either.
Right.
And doesn't want to be a hero, actually. He just wants to make his way through and not make too many waves and stay off people's radar. And yeah.
And is he really, do we feel like, is that the commentary that Ed and Sean are making about people like this? Like, we know he's born into this life.
Mm-hmm.
We see that in this version, in this one, right? We see that.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So this is the life that he was going to have, but he's smart. And so he's like, what you see, like when people are like where I live, anytime there's a storm, which is all the time, there's people who come in and they go to the old people's house and they put on, they dress up like con men and they're like, oh, let me do a roof thing, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And they literally climb up there. They have ladders. They have a work truck. They get up there. They are like, here's what it's going to cost. They even give them an estimate. Then they take a deposit and then they disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the thing is, if you had actually just done, if you just became a roofer, you could also make all that money and sure. not be a fuck. Because now those people are out of all their money. And so, like, it's always so frustrating, right, when people don't use their talents for good. And we like heists. We like criminal stuff. I'm not pretending that we don't like it. But it's just like, in this particular case, he's such a piece of shit. But also, you're like, well, we also know you couldn't. So, I don't know. Like, that, could he get out? Or is he so far gone? Like, by the time he has agency, this is his only chance. There's not like, he's like, oh, I could join the army, they probably wouldn't even take him.
No, and you know, we will see in a later volume how that turns out anyway. But it's interesting because I think it came to me as just as I finished, and you know, that we had that crossover, he's like a reluctant protagonist, really, isn't he?
He doesn't really want
any of this. And then we meet this character, because a lot of this is all childhood friends, isn't it? So as you said, he was born into it, his dad and Ivan were, they indoctrinated him early. They were training him up as he was a child to pickpocket. And so, he really had no choice, to be honest. But also you see childhood friends, don't you, who some will meet again and some we won't. And there's one who's become, like, she works for the internal investigations, doesn't she?
Yeah.
We meet her right towards the end of this volume. And that's really interesting. She's the only one, really, that appears to have got out of the life, but has still put herself into harm's way, has put herself into, and it's Leo saying this, it's really great narration, put herself into a position where everyone hates her anyway.
Right.
So she couldn't almost help herself. She could have gone in any direction once she was out, but she chose to put herself in a position that still was really difficult and didn't give her an easy life. And so I think it is about this cycle of being trapped, and even when you get out, you're not out.
Right, because then there's Gnarly. There's his option, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's there. He knows everybody. There's a shorthand to me that they've known each other a long time.
Definitely,
you know, whether it's just because Gnarly's always run the bar or Gnarly bought the bar via nefarious means, whatever. He seems like a decent person, but he also chooses to be here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's also still here being Gnarly, being this guy. who's, you know, like you need to have that, having a bartender in a story like this, like you talk about a trope, but he's also a good guy who comes through at the end, you know, but he also could, he owns a business. He's not dumb.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He could go somewhere else.
He could. He's so interesting. He's kind of Marv crossed with Genocide Jones, sort of.
Yeah.
He's a really interesting character. And I don't, yeah, could he have gone somewhere else? I think because of the way he looks, he's sort of trapped in this underground life. But then what is, he's quite an oxymoron, isn't he? Like, he looks one way, but clearly he's different on the inside.
Oh, way. Yeah, yeah.
He's a bit Lenny-ish, isn't he? Like, of Mice and Men Lenny-ish. Like, he's this big, hulking.
He's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, bald head, but, you know, like, scarred and, like, but inside he's really soft and sweet and cares and looks out for people. And
he's
yeah,
really
cool.
Yeah, I really like him as a character. I think it's important too that there's got to be like everybody has to have somebody they trust. And so if Gnarly's the guy, like it's Katie, right? And you know, he's the Katie. Everybody can come to Katie because Katie's is safe. Like if shit goes down, you may have to worry about Marv and Katie's, but you got to worry about Katie.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, who's really protecting Nancy? Is it Marv? Mm-hmm. Is it Harriet? Is it Harrigan? Or is it Katie? Is she the boss?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's like that idea. That's, and I like that. I like having a good person who is just good, who's like circumstance. But I mean, he's obviously smart enough. He's talented enough. But again, it's his good big heart. He wants to try to help his neighborhood. And there's that whole idea we talked about with why Ava won't just fucking leave. Right.
Yeah.
Just get out of here. Yeah. So it's really interesting. Storytelling here. We brought up Greta. There's the whole story with Greta and her kid and Greta. So we learn that Greta's in the situation she's in. She's a recovering junkie. If she had been involved in the big thing, the big thing that went down 5 years ago that the story starts, her husband would be alive. Annie would still have a dad. Everybody's life would be better. Air quotes. Really? Would it be? You'd all still be criminals. Do you let, what do we like her? Do you like her? Are we supposed to like her? Do we feel bad for her ending?
She's on the more clear, not hero journey, like redemptive arc,
yeah.
Isn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
She's on the redemptive arc. She's the one that started again. I know Leah has as well, but this really low ebb and then is building up. And she's got to this, and she's like one job away from getting out. She's that classic character. So we know what's going to happen. But she is on that redemptive arc. So yeah, I think we are supposed to like her. And again, she's another one who, more of the drawing than the character, that I was thinking back to Sleeper, because she's like a reverse Miss Misery.
Mm.
At the start of the story, she does, you know, still look like she's coming out of that kind of drug addict phase. And then by the end, she sort of regains some luster and some vitality and some sense of, you know, I don't know, there's something about the way that Phillips draws her by the end. And I know that her and Leah have a bit of a spark as well, but it's not that. It's in herself that she can feel that she's getting close to this, where she wants to be, and to this escape. And it's giving her a new sense of rejuvenation and life. And then, of course, so yeah, I do like her. And I think it's heartbreaking.
It is.
When that
I
moment
think,
happens.
And again, giving us Annie, you know, kids, that it's a kid in distress. Like, Greta's not a damsel in distress. She's part of the crew. She's runs. It's her call. She's the one who brings Leo in. You know, like she's trustworthy, honor among thieves stuff. It is heartbreaking because I think you're right too. The whole time that they're out on the farm and she's recovering, and you see her, and see, to me, you said the reverse Miss Misery, and this is where Sean shines. She's not really clean. She's been lying the whole time, and you know it because Sean is a fucking genius, where it's like at the beginning, he's like, you weren't on the thing because I don't work with junkies, which again, all my heroes have been junkies. Maybe that'll come up again later. Maybe there's a whole weird thing with drugs and alcohol that will be a running theme that we'll have to address. But that whole scene where you see her at the beginning and she looks rough. And like you said, she is on this redemptive arc, but it's not until they spend the 2 weeks at the farm when you actually understand now she's clean.
Mm.
That's how I read it. Her,
no,
the
that's
glow
interesting.
About her is it's is she's been he because again he's bullshitter, she's lying. He's like, she's like, I was clean. I have a kid. I was clean. But this doesn't mean anything. Just because you have a kid, it's like the whole idea of like, I can't be a misogynist because I have daughters. That's not true. Actually, that makes you worse, right? That's you hiding behind that. Not like, oh shit, I had daughters and realized I was being a misogynist, but I can't be because. Is that how that works? I don't think, but people use that bullshit excuse
Sure.
all the time,
Yeah.
right? So, I that's how I read what
That's
you're
really
describing.
interesting. Yeah, and that, you know, so. And they're out of the city, aren't they? That's what's really
Yeah,
important.
that's
They're
true
out of
too.
this
You're
place that
right.
is like poisoning them and that they need to be out from. So I think the two things in combination, absolutely. Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, I really I think you're right too. The being out of the city, and that is a really great because Sean does this, and it's like we know when we read their later stuff, and you know they get out of the. He's so good at everything. It doesn't matter what he does. And the watercolor covers of the individual issues are just gorgeous. But you're right, he does. He captures the vastness of it as much as he captures like the claustrophobia of this place. And then when you go out here, you just feel like you
Yeah.
feel it. You feel the tone shift.
Absolutely. I love it. Yeah, I love his cityscapes. And you're right, it is claustrophobic because it just feels clunky and full. Every panel feels it's got like really interesting geometry behind with the kind of buildings and the fire escapes. I don't know if that's what
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
called.
yeah. And the train, there's an elevated train,
Yeah.
which is a Chicago thing. And like the scene where he meets Jen for the first time, and well, the only time is that's the only time she's in it, right? Is when they sit at the diner. Yeah. And so he pulls up, and it's like this scene, it's just like a simple, small panel, but it's like so he gets out of his car, he's parked next to a steel beam, which means he's under the train, and there's just shit on the there's a garbage can, and there's shit all around the garbage can. And then there's like there's a bunch of people on the street and no one is walking together. And what I found fascinating is how few people in this city are with other people. The city's packed, but it's always like in the background, like you talked about, like it's full of lonely people, right? There's not like this isn't like the opening of Batman 89 where there's like a family off to see, you know, it's like running through the city. It's like, it's very, and of course we know how that ends up, but this idea of this dirty, awful place where everybody's alone and yet we're all trapped here by ourselves with a million other people. And it's just like all in the background. And again, I don't know how much of that's Ed's like Sean do that, or if Sean's just like, you know, it'd be cool.
No, that is really interesting. And either way, it doesn't matter. And I think you're right. It works because even our main, one of like hero cast,
Yeah.
all our main characters, none of them, whether they're in the crew or in the police or none of them really get on. Even when we
No,
go to, even when
right.
we go to like
You
the
know, yeah.
blackmailing drug dealer,
Yeah.
who's kind of the face behind it all, none of his crewmates get on. They're all outside arguing. And so you're right, actually, it starts with the kind of the main cast. At every level,
Yeah.
nobody really likes anybody or talks to anybody
Right,
nicely.
and he takes care of Ivan, but like he's awful and he's pantsing the nurse and he's doing all
Yeah.
this awful stuff, that poor woman. And again, she's just like, I can't do it, man. And so it's like the only people like he, and of course, Leo's like the cancer, like no matter who he's with, their life is bad. He's the he, that poor nurse, Ivan's the stuff that happens with Ivan, the stuff that happens with Greta, you know, Annie's life, Annie's fucked. He's responsible for her dad being killed. Now he's not respond she it's her own fault at the
Greta.
end, Greta at the end. And this is one of those goddamn it patience. All you need is this much. And I get it though. I get it. And that's what makes it great. Like you talked about, use a trope, but then stab you in the right in the heart with it. Like while I'm
Yeah.
looking at you.
Where's the last moment when Leo bursts in and saves the day? Nope.
Nope. We're not gonna get that. No,
No.
no, no. No, he's not even close.
No,
It's there's
absolutely
not
not.
there then, and that's what I appreciate. They didn't even say we're gonna make it be like, oh, you know, right, like in Last Crusade where he can almost save her. No, you're
No.
dead. No, that's not happening. That's not, and that's okay. it makes it more heartbreaking, but it also makes it more stark. It makes, again, how alone, even though you're like, they kind of have a spark and they're together, but they're not.
No. We sort of, even if the mission ended with a success, we know probably Greta would go off to Annie, and then it was still would have been left Leo alone. So that was kind of our expectations anyway.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
It obviously becomes much worse, but it does lead on to one of my favorite panels in the book, which is when he kills Seymour. So Seymour's there lying in wait, isn't he? He's like the main corrupt cop that Leo knows from before.
Yeah.
And he puts a shotgun on him, doesn't he? And takes him to the car and he's like, take me to the drugs. And Leo throws the cocaine and it hits Seymour in the face. And he's like, a thing that's important, like it's called like antiquing or something when you throw flour on people's heads. And the panel is so brilliant. Like he looks all white and then Leo shoots him. And it's that weird, you know, like blood and snow here. It's that weird mixture of like kind of white antiques cocaine with the blood on the background. It's brilliant, brilliant artwork.
It is really good. And because it looks, and the way that he's right, because the spot, the blood, the going, I just scrolled to it, where the shot goes through his head is black blood and the red is behind him. And that's what it would be. That's what it would look like. Oh, it's so good. He's
got
amazing.
Like a look of surprise on his face, I think,
yeah.
or like a
yeah,
astonishment on his face.
Genuinely shocked. Because he's also getting killed while he's getting fucked up.
Yeah. And always thought he had the upper hand as well. Like, there's no chance Leo could ever, because he's a coward, right? There's no chance Leo could ever get the upper hand on him. Yeah.
Right. And I love that the hotel where the fat bastard is holding Annie is called the Lark. It's like, I mean, it's like there's so many things. There's so many little brilliant pieces of writing. So
even
you wanted
right back, I was going to say, even right back to the, you know, the fact that they count on Leo being a coward during the robbery is just so, that's where, you know, taking a trope but doing something new with it. That's where the writing of Ed is so clever.
Yeah. Yeah,
that they knew he'd have a cowardly way out of a difficult situation, but they banked on that. That's brilliant.
Right, because you've seen The Prestige.
I have, yeah.
This is it, right? This is The Prestige. This is the act the whole time. This is it. The
yeah.
whole thing, the way that, the reason that that works, and we're not going to, if you've not seen The Prestige, people, but like, it's right in front of you the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it works. And so it works because he set up his whole life. It's like his whole life has led to this heroic ending.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Killing is a lot harder than dying, Jack.
Killing is a lot harder than dying. Yeah, I guess we'll
I
find out.
I love that line. I love
whether,
that line.
Whether it, you know, whether Leo survives or, you know, or not.
Yeah.
We will
but
find
I
out
think
in
that-
later volumes.
We do, but I think that that's really beautiful, though. It goes to what you've been
it
saying
is.
Off the top about playing with tropes. It's not what people say. It's always like, you know, oh, killing is so hard. He's like, killing's easy. These people suck. Everybody here sucks. He's killing Annie would be hard. Greta dying was hard. He didn't kill Greta. He blames himself, of course, but it's Greta. He doesn't know that it was Greta's own fault for getting them to come. But I love that. It's, again, like everything is flipped on its head.
And ties perfectly into his backstory, because as we find out, the reason he doesn't have a gun, the reason he doesn't shoot or get into fights and chooses to opt out of aggressive situations is because of what he has done in the past. And he doesn't want to do that again. He doesn't want to become that person who does find killing easy. Yeah, so it all ties together beautifully in the end, in the final panel and final.
And he's a great shooter. Right, and that's the other thing is he's a real, because there's the whole, which, you know, in a dumber book, like them shooting bottles at the farm, which again is kind of them, you know, it is a weird love scene over him teaching her how to shoot, but he's really good.
That's her teaching him, I think, isn't
all
it?
Oh, right. Well, is it though?
Well, yeah, sure. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Because you see, he shoots him when that's your favorite shot, it's right through the middle of the head. That was, you don't do that on accident. Yeah, it's so very good. Well, you wanted to talk about Val. Val Staples' color.
Oh, the colors. Yes, I did. It's just how they make like color pop in quite a simple, stark panel. And it's often like police siren lights. How they do that, how they make it like bleed out from where the light is, just looks so realistic, looks so brilliant. But it's also like the glow of windows against the dark night. It's just this quality in this book here, which I don't remember seeing done as well as this really anywhere else, where like a central point of light starts and then like bleeds out into the book. It's so good.
It is. I don't really understand how they do it. Like, I don't know if Sean and Val sit down and Sean says to Val, "Hey man, do this." And Val's like, "I got you." Cause Val's an artist in his own, like he's not just a color art. Like, and again, to say just a color artist, I don't mean that, but you know what I mean? Like there are people who make their living just as color artists.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are people who make their living doing both, you know, or they color and they write or whatever. But this is really like, he gets his own nameplate. It's Brubaker Phillips, and then the next page is Colors by Val Staples,
mm-hmm.
right? That's no joke. Rightfully so. And yeah, it's worthy of it because of what
it's also used, and also used as a filter as well. It's like in filmmaking, you know, when you if you want a scene to feel cold, you put on the blue filter. That's very simplistic. But it's done here as well, I think, in the colors. Like at times, there's like a... Sometimes it's a block color in the background, and I really like how Phillips and Val work together on this. Sometimes the backgrounds are really detailed, but if they really need us to focus on the characters and what they're saying or their facial expressions, they'll just do a panel background, which is cool. But oftentimes it's like they've put a color filter over the panel too, and it helps you to really understand the mood of that scene or the tone of that scene, which I think is really clever.
It's really... There's a scene towards the end where he finds Annie at the hotel and he fights the big fat guy. And the guy's getting ice. And then Leo walks up behind him and there's a panel where he's faster than he looks. Fuck is the line. And and there's these two lines of shadow. So like it tells you everything about how fast he moved, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because his back is turned, now he's turning, his arm is here. But the guy's so big that you're seeing these shadows against the wall that are him blocking out the light because he's so big. And just, again, the way, like, Sean drew that, but clearly that's Val, knowing mm-hmm. how to fill that color in. It's so dark, it blocks the paneling in the wood. Like, the detail there, these, and the to me, the things that I love the best is the coloring in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of this, you know, crime stories don't take place during the day. They take place in the rain and in the dark. We get all of that plus. Mm-hmm. And so, like you talked about, that's why the police sirens look so cool, because mm-hmm. it's always dark. It's never like 2:30 mm-hmm. in the afternoon, let's go do crimes. You know, it's this. So it just, it's really great.
It is really great. And, you know, we, like I said, you and I have read ahead because of this project kept getting delayed. But if we just read this, I'd be saying, you know, like, wow, like, well, I'm already saying wow anyway, but you know, this is a 5-star opening to a saga, and actually it somehow gets better. So we're already at 5 stars. So there are no more stars we can give it. But within the 5-star realm, we still have room for improvement. We still have better storytelling to come. We still have better arc. We still have better coloring. It's astonishing.
It is. And I think if they didn't do more, if this ended it, I'm fine with this. And this is the Kafka bit, right? And it's like Kafka drops in the middle of a story and he just ends. And so this is like, we've got the three Kafka pieces. There's the Kafka story, and that it's even written by K, right? Joseph K, which is the name of the character in the trial. And so he looks like Dick Tracy. I still can't figure it all out, but I just love the nod to, they're telling you right here, you are discombobulated. We're not telling you everything. Maybe you'll get there, maybe you won't. And by sticking by doing the Kafka private eye story throughout the story, it's just letting the reader know something is right in front of you that you can't see. And that to me is where the Kafka thing is. It's like the opening of the Metamorphosis is, you know, Gregor Samsa awoke to find he had been transformed into a giant vermin. That's it. That is what happens. Like that, he's a bug at the beginning.
It's not the hour of the fly.
Right.
Of the Jeff Goldblum Cronenberg fly that you get before he's a fly. Boom. Yeah.
Right. It's just, he's that. And you never find out what happened the moment before, the day before he woke that way. You don't see the transformation. It just is. Now you have to figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
And you may find out, you may never find out. You know, same with the trial, same with the castle. everything that he does is like, here it's in front of you and I'm letting you decide what to do with it. And so that's what I really like about the Kafka stuff, is they're just saying to you, we're even going to give you Kafka. We're dropping you. The way it starts is the middle of a story. And so that's why it's timey-wimey, right? It's like, this is now, but then we're going to go to Lawless next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's told at a different time and this time.
Yeah.
And then we move on, and then we get Sinner, and we move on. And it's like, where are these times? Who are these people? How are they all tied together? And in the Kafka way, I'm putting it all on screen in front of you. I'm giving you the panel to decide. And I love an author who trusts the reader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They trust us to make our own decisions, and they want us, and very Kafka-esque, you don't, there can be conflicting opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is ballsy too. Like, to be like, we don't, it doesn't have to be a tied up bow.
No, that's true. And I think they give the reader an out as well, which I appreciate. That was amazing, by the way. But they give the reader out, because Leo, when he's reading the panels, doesn't he? He says something like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, if you're a reader reading Leo reading the comic strip within a comic strip, and you're like, it doesn't make any goddamn sense to me, good, because Leo doesn't get it either.
Leo doesn't, and you're not supposed to. Yeah, I love it. And you're like, wait, who is this guy, Dick Tracy, and why is there, you know, so it's like, because he definitely looks like Dick Tracy. It is glorious. So I'm so happy about that. And in typical us fashion, somehow we've talked for 50 minutes and we're at the end of our time here, unfortunately.
Yeah. And we've barely scratched the surface, but that's because there's so much that you can,
we could do a whole
series just on this one graphic novel, probably.
We could do it book by book. We could do issue by issue and do 45 minutes. And that is something maybe somewhere down the line after we finish this bit back to the bibliography in the comics, like maybe that would be something fun to do, like just a 12 issue mini series, issue by issue, almost like, you know, it's like we, you know, because this is essentially season's greetings is what we're doing. This is season one. I mean, we literally did that with Sleeper. They were season one and season two. So we're doing the season greasing versions of the criminal verse of the, we're only doing the collections. We're not, except for the Nor one-off, we're not doing that. We're doing the whole collection, you know? So it might be fun, you know, cause like, you know, Matt does the individual issues of All-Star Comics. So that might be a fun thing to do down the line with something.
Agreed.
But for now, this is what we've done. So, thank you for this. Thank you for suggesting this. Thank you for us finally getting it in the, it's recorded. Hopefully everything comes out fine. This will come out in April time, I guess. So it's April now. I think I'm pretty booked up for merch because I've got to be gone in April. So I'm trying to get a little bit ahead. So what's going on? Where are we filmogging in mid-April?
Oh, in mid-April, where will we be? So I guess Scott and I, we've been on our little project, and you've had your own project.
Yeah.
Scott and I have been making our way through the police story. So
which
we
is great.
May
that's
well
on.
You'll
be on 20th Century Geek doing those.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we, depending on when he releases those, we definitely would have done three, and we may well have done First Strike 4 as well. We've decided not to do Supercop 2 because it's the Michelle Yeoh-focused spin-off. Because it's so hard to get hold of here in this country. I don't know what it's like in the States, but it's not on any streaming services. You can't buy it on... even on physical. So
yeah, I don't remember how I, it might have been one of those, I don't remember how I saw it either. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's too
we
bad.
May get around to it one day, which is a shame because we both really want to watch it. But so we're going to have to skip straight to First Strike. So we'll be there. And then I think if we're in April, I'm deep in mega budget, mega success stealth. So Fast and Furious 8 and the Meg, I'll be around that kind of era where.
You're coming to the end.
I'm coming to the end. I've got 9 left now. Yeah.
Yeah.
As of recording, and it'll be less by the time the show comes out.
And then you'll finally release to the universe. Cause I don't even know. Nobody knows. Does Am know what the next series will be? Is she the only one?
I don't
know
if I even know, to be honest. I'm going to do like a little mini series. I've picked a director and I'm going to do.
Oh, okay.
So just to bridge the gap a bit, like sometimes we kept talking about season's greetings. We're going to do one-off.
And then
before I get into another long winded 2 years.
Oh, so just like somebody who's got a short, so it's not going to be like Linklater. When you say
no,
a director,
he's on
the
list. To be fair, I would love to do all of his, but that would be similar to an actor's investment. So I'm just going to do a bit of a shorter filmography before I get into a longer one again.
Nice, nice. Well, you know, like, and there's definitely people whose filmographies are unfortunately short.
There are. That is true.
You know, so those that could be an interesting look at, you know, gone too soon or retired or whatever, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Cool. Well, I should be, so in April time, I will have a show, an ADHD cast out with Jess, Keith, and I. Who knows? Because we find out it's magic. We just did Highlander. We've got the Beatles coming up. The Heath and Tony talk about whatever. Mandatory Music in April. The release will be Dave's pick, which was Siamese Dream from the Smashing Pumpkins. So, yeah, that's good. And we will have season two of Justified.
We will. Wonderful.
Yeah. It's Justified. And I'm really excited about that because, God damn, I love that show. So this has been, that's been really great. Yeah, so that's just kind of where I'm at. I'm just trying to get packed ahead. Yes, we finished, Scott and I just finished our four-part thing retrospective all in one go. And then we come to the final, the last episode of season one of Storytime, which will be the 1955 classic, This Island Earth, where there is definitely a scene where they, where somebody's hand stick to a bar and they say, yes, these are magnetic. That's right. A line that's said out loud. But so are your hands then?
Not movie I've seen, but it sounds like a movie I'm going to really enjoy watching.
Well, here's the thing. What I would say, watch the movie, read the story, read, and then the Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie, the one that is that.
Okay.
So I can't tell what I like better. Like, there are certain movies that you just can't watch without them, but I have. Like, Birdemic, only watch their you know, their version, the Riff Tracks version. Cool as Ice, only the Riff Tracks version, because Cool and Ice is, but I saw Cool as Ice, you know. But like, there's certain movies that are like that, and I can't tell with This Island Earth. So I'm going to rewatch the original and then watch the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version as well, just to see how that'll go. So yeah, we've got stuff going on. And I just finished a book.
You just finished a book.
Crazy. Life is crazy. So, and what I want everybody to do is say thank you for listening all the way to the end. I do, unfortunately, have to go make dinner. I mean, not because I don't want to starve to death, but just time. This time change. Next time we meet, we'll be back to 5 hours apart. So yes. we'll have a little more time. So thank you. I'm going to play, I feel like I'd be remiss, and I don't know how you feel about Fiona Apple, but she has a song called Criminal that I love. So I feel like we should listen to some of that. Have you ever heard it?
Not to my, probably, but not that I could sing it to, back to you now.
Amazing. All right. Well, we'll see everybody in a few weeks where we go back to Harlan and see how things are going. Probably pretty bad. I'm assuming somebody will be sexy and not have a shirt on. And it'll be you.
Right. It definitely won't be me.
All right. We'll see everybody next time. Bye. Take care, mate.